back to the podcast. This is the SPM Show. I am your host, Bruce. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. Today, we have Michael from Rail Trail Flatbread Company. This is a great episode. Michael owns a couple Rail Trail restaurant pizzerias. They called flatbread, but it's really a pizzeria restaurant. But he also owns an ice cream business that has five locations. And we talk about how he started Rail Trail, two locations. They do about $6 million a year each in sales, plus he has an ice cream business that has five locations. They have distribution of that ice cream in Whole Foods and other distributors as well. Smart business guy. Talks a lot about building team, working with partners, how he built up the sales for Rail Trail, how it got started, and how he developed this whole community inside the area that he's in. I think this is a really great episode. We're going to have to get Michael back on the podcast because, you know, we try to keep these podcasts to under 45 minutes just so that you can consume it all in one shot. And there's just so much information that he has in his brain that I was not able to extract in that 45 minutes. So we'll have to do another episode of the podcast. And you know what? I'm even going there for the YouTube show that we have, the SPM show over on YouTube. Go check out that Smart Pizza Marketing on YouTube. I'm going to go there for a future video and kind of show you the restaurant itself, because listening to the podcast is fantastic, but being able to see what we talk about is just as amazing, if not more amazing than that. So we're going to be doing that in the next couple weeks, so stay tuned for that. If you haven't yet, go subscribe to our YouTube channel. Video this week coming out about how to grow lunch sales. Also, if you're listening to this podcast when it comes out, also garlic breath pizza, probably one of the simplest menus I've ever seen in my life. I think he has four or five items on the menu, and he's doing a good job growing his sales. A couple people working for him, and he does a good business with only four or five items. So it was pretty excited to see his menu, because I always talk to myself and say, Bruce, if you ever opened a pizzeria again, what would you do? And then his menu is probably what I would do. So go check out that video as well. Also, I have some spots available for if you want to work with me directly. If you want to work with me, I can help you with your marketing, give you a plan, an action plan when it comes to YouTube, Instagram, what's working, an outline for marketing. You don't have to hire a company. Just work with me for 1 hour. I've opened up some slots over on our website. Go to smartpizzamarketing.com. You'll see how to do that if you want to work with me directly. And it's not a long-term commitment. It's like I'll meet with you for an hour. You'll walk away from that hour knowing exactly what you need to do in the future. And then, you know, we'll have check-ins in the future. But all you need is an hour with me, and I can go over your marketing, and I can tell you exactly what you need to do in order to be successful at it. Like, it's not an overnight success, but it will happen if you follow it and you're consistent, if you follow the blueprint I have for you. Go over to the website, Smart Pizza Marketing, to check that out. And thank you to today's sponsors of the podcast, Fiero Group. You're looking for an oven, a mixer, some dough recipes for your house. They also have classes, fierogroup.com. They have that Opera Prima that pounds out the dough for you. So if you have a busy shop and you're like, I can't find help, check out that machine. I did a video on that. The machine works really good. Also, fierogroup.com is their website. Ovens, mixers, dough dividers, dough rollers. Those save you a tremendous amount of time. And as we move forward, automation is going to be the key in being able to have tools in your pizzeria that help you make better pizza, but also manage your business better is key. Fiero Group helps you do that. Also, if you're looking for a point of sale system, Food Tech Solutions is the one I suggest. If you have a takeout delivery pizzeria, Food Tech Solution is the best platform for you for a couple of reasons. Its order entry is super simple. Its UAX is easy to maneuver and teach people how to use. The back-end reporting is fantastic. They also have integrations with apps that your drivers can have, so you can see where your drivers are all the time once you get it set up properly. And it should track those drivers. And then it also does a ton of marketing for you. So when you're running a pizzeria, trying to get everything in one system is key. So you don't have seven different softwares or platforms you have to go to in order to run your marketing. Food Tech Solutions helps you with email, helps you with text, helps you with follow-up, helps you with reporting, does all of that in one system so you can actually do it. When you have more systems, you do less because you just don't go to those different platforms. Food Tech Solutions is my go-to POS system for your business. SmartPizzaMarketing.com/FoodTech. Get a demo. I guarantee you're going to like it, especially if you have a takeout delivery style pizzeria. It's the best one I've seen, and I've seen them all. This is the one I used. This is the one I suggest. All right, enough of that. Thank you to the sponsors of the podcast. Check out the magazine that's coming up soon, and let's get into the podcast with Michael. I really do think you're going to like this one. This podcast was great. A lot of information. Michael's a smart guy. runs a very successful business. So let's get into today's episode.
All right, Michael, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for hanging out with me today.
Thanks, Bruce. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. I'm talking to Anthony Allen from Otto Pizza, and he's like, you got to check out this place. It's amazing. They have great pizza, great business they have going on. So I was like, all right, let's do it. And I reached out, and you guys are like, yeah, let's talk. So I'm excited to kind of hear what you have going on. So for the people at home listening, explain like where you're located and a little bit about your business and kind of how you got started.
Yeah, so our business has grown. We're in different locations, but our main, we call it our campus, is downtown Hudson, Massachusetts. So people that aren't familiar where that is, because we get that question all the time, it's basically west on Mass Pike where it hits 495. That's Marlboro, and we're right north of Marlboro. So kind of in between Marlboro and the Route 2 area.
So that's about an hour outside of Boston, right?
About 40 minutes.
Okay. So not too far.
Not quite an hour.
That's great. How did you get there?
So I grew up in the Boston area, kind of more actual Cambridge, Watertown, Belmont. I grew up in Belmont. We were in the North Shore for a while. My father had small pizza and sub shops all over New England, really, mostly in the Boston area. And I grew up working and participating from a young kid, like, you know, 3 years old. I was inside some of the shops.
Wow. Folding boxes.
By 5 years old, yeah, I was in charge of head box folder. Yeah. He had some restaurants like in the 70s, 80s across from Digital and Maynard, and he knew the area and fell in love with downtown Hudson. He was a fan of architecture, so he loved all the old buildings. He finally bought a building. It was his dream to buy a couple buildings in Hudson, so he bought a building where our ice cream shop is now, and across the street, my uncle bought the building where our main restaurant is.
Oh, wow.
That's downtown Hudson. Hudson had kind of gone through some weird economic periods. And long story short, there was, you know, in the early 2000s, kind of had a bit of an emptying out of its downtown. And my uncle was looking to fill the space. My business partner and I were at Babson. We were just graduating. Kareem, we were in a class together. We were in a study group together, and he was really passionate about pizza, and he wanted to start a restaurant. I was working on another project and kind of traveling in Southeast Asia, working on a vitamin fortification project that I had as an idea through Babson, where we were doing our MBA. Long story short, my father had a restaurant in Weston he was trying to get out of. Kareem wanted to open up a pizza business. My uncle had this empty space. Downtown wasn't happening, so we thought, hey, let's open up a small pizza shop, put a tenant in there. If it goes well, my uncle will have a tenant. We'll sell the business. We'll use those funds. We'll do something else. Had all these ideas of, you know, being these MBAs, doing cool business ideas. And we ended up falling in love. We built the place ourselves. We were, you know, a couple broke kids and had the help of my uncle, who was a retired contractor. So we made a cool deal. We said, hey, we'll go in, we'll build this place, we'll do it together. If it works, we'll see what happens. So we opened, and like day one, it was a hit. Like, I remember Facebook was brand new. We posted on Facebook, like, we'll be open tonight at 5, and turned the staff training into like, hey, now you're working. Let's sweep up some of the sawdust and put away some of the paint buckets. Checks were starting to bounce, so we're like, we got to open tonight.
Was that Rail Trail?
That was Rail Trail. So we opened in 2012 after about a year of trying to construct it ourselves. And it was like, we had a line out the door our first night.
That's crazy.
And it was a blessing because, you know, a lot of people were banking on this being success. And, from day one, it was a really special place. And you could see the response from the community. Soon after, we became like a centerpiece in the downtown. And, it organically developed into like a career in the restaurant business.
That's great. In the pizza business. So what was the name of your parents' pizzeria?
So my dad had a few different shops. He was a serial entrepreneur. He was really good at buying and flipping them. So he had lots of different names, but the most popular chain that he had was called Theo's Pizzeria, and they were all around the city.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I was going to usually ask people at this point, like, all right, where'd you learn how to make pizza? But obviously I know you grew up in the pizzeria industry. So your family was probably making pizza since you're 6 years old.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, some of my earliest memories were being in the back, watching my dad, trying to get him. Like, I was always obsessed with letting him, let me work in the shop. I don't know why. I thought it was like the coolest thing. And he,
it is cool. It, when you're young, it's super cool to like work in a pizza shop.
Yeah, I just found it like really empowering. I loved the responsibility of being like in a station and doing something on my own. Of course, it's super dangerous, you know, flat fryer laters, meat slicers, knives everywhere. So my dad didn't want us in there, but probably like as soon as I was 9 years old, we were, you know, either at the register or, you know, doing positions, topping, doing something. So yeah, some of my earliest memories were in the restaurant.
That's great. Good family time with your dad too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So describe what your business, like the Rail Trail now, I know it's probably grown a lot over the years, but like what kind of, is it a takeout delivery? Is it sit down a restaurant and give the people at home a listen?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Rail Trail Flatbread Company is a place that's, it's first and foremost, it's a community business. We, about 200 seater, first thing you see when you walk in is a beautiful wood-fired brick and stone oven right at the center. It's a completely wood-fired oven. We use a sourdough yeast. The yeast comes from a friend of ours who says it was a yeast specimen from, goes back all the way to the Gold Rush, so we call it our Gold Rush dough.
Oh, wow.
We make a crackery, thinner crust, still it's kind of got a little bit of a sweet taste, got a lot of flavor. Our menu is primarily the flatbreads, but we have amazing salads, we have wings, we have, you know, our burgers are some of the most popular items on the menu. Huge craft beer list, we have 20 craft beers. We're probably one of the more destination craft beer restaurants. We have fantastic cocktails and a lot of like American comfort food, so we got a little bit of everything for everyone. On a typical day, you know, during, we have slam lunches, we have a lot of corporate, a lot of retirees, we have a couple, 50 plus communities nearby, and we have a lot of corporate, so you'll see all types of people during lunch. A lot of takeout, and during early dinner, you have tons of families, you have hockey teams coming in from some of the local hockey rinks, a lot of young families. And, all the way towards late dinner, we have a lot of young people, empty nesters coming in for a nightcap and having a beer at the bar. So kind of, remember, we were building our business plan and our friends at business school were like, hey, who's your target market? And we're like, everybody, really anyone who likes to eat and drink. So, and it kind of ended up that way. While we were building our place, we just had the door open and just kept asking people, like, what do you want to see in the restaurant? And we took all those notes, and that's what the menu was. And it kind of became a place for everybody. So our whole thing is to be inviting and accessible for anyone, and making sure anyone who comes through our door really feels like we're hosting them at our own home. And I think that's a big part of the draw for people who come to a Rail Trail Flatbread Company. It's not just the experience of the wood-fired oven and seeing it's an open kitchen, so you feel like you're right in the kitchen, you're surrounded by people working, but it feels like you're in a home. People give me that feedback all the time, like it feels like you're in somebody's, country kitchen.
So that's great. Now, it says flatbread, but like I don't want people listening at home to think, like, I think that some people, when they hear flatbread, think of like a flat piece of, not bread, but like, what are they, it's like almost like a lavish bread, right? Like that's what they think of when they think of flatbread, but yeah, it's not.
I can show you, I have one right next to me.
Yeah, basically, it's not flatbread.
It is a round, pizza. And to us, flatbread is pizza. But right. basically, you know, when we were first starting the business, we were trying to really do our homework and figure out who we were going to be. And right off the bat, we went to the Pizza Expo in Vegas, and we really learned a lot. We met a lot of cool people that expressed the importance of staying true to who you are and also dialing into the specifics of what the pizza is, not just making a generic pizza and not knowing what the style is. So we started looking at the different styles, and we realized, like, okay, none of us were Italian, so didn't really make sense to, like, make an Italian-based concept. Really didn't love, like, any of the pan pizzas. Like, we love them, but didn't feel like it was a good fit for us.
Yeah. Like the Greek-style pizza, you mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. I love Greek pizza, but I didn't want to do a Greek pizza. I grew up in it, and I wanted something different. You know, I felt like it would be a lot harder operationally to have, like, all the pans stacked up everywhere, and I wanted something unique. We knew we wanted to do a wood-fired concept just because we thought it tasted the best. And so we didn't follow Neapolitan. We didn't follow New York style. We weren't Sicilian. We weren't Detroit. None of that. So we said, you know, what do we want to be? And we felt like the flatbread concept was just an American kind of spin on doing things any way you want. So
yeah.
It allowed us to not hold true to the traditional styles and do something completely individual and unique to what we want to do. So, like, a lot of our flatbreads, our flatbread pizzas, the actual things on the menu, you'll have, like, our street corn flatbread. It'll have all kinds of different toppings that you wouldn't see on a typical pizza. We have a cheeseburger flatbread, which everyone loves. It's basically like ground meat and pickles and mustard and ketchup and arugula. Or we do some more traditional ones, like with charcuterie and banana peppers and things you might see at an Italian place. So we really have the full spectrum. But to us, like, what makes our flatbreads unique, the dough is a sourdough. It's more of a low hydration dough. It's a lot crunchier. We crisp the edges. It's got a lot of bubbles in it. You know, it use a blended cheese, has four different cheeses in it. And our sauce is very, very straightforward. It's just a tomato base. We put fresh seasonings on top, olive oil. That's it.
I love it. If you go to Rail Trail Flatbread Co. on Instagram, you can see all the pizzas. It kind of looks more like a Chicago tavern style pizza than anything else.
Yeah, some people have said that.
You know, that's what it reminds me of the most. Looking at it, I haven't had it yet. Well, we're going to do a video when we come in there and try it out. But yeah, from looking at it, it looks like, if you're listening to this podcast and trying to visualize what the pizza looks like, think of like the Chicago tavern style. It's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah.
But it looks great.
It is delicious. It's delicious.
And I just hear, when people hear flatbread, they're like, oh, that's not pizza. But I'm like, it's not what you think of when you think of flatbread.
Yeah, I think people get a little bit of, they get a little
scared. Some diehards in the pizza community, you know?
Yeah. We're part of the, for a few years now, we've been part of the Roni Rumble, this online competition of, really, it's just a fun way of all these pizza places competing against each other.
Wes does that, right? I think his name's Wes. You guys name Wes Matt. Or something that does? Oh, Matt. Okay.
Yeah, We Say Gravy is the page.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Promotes it. And it's funny because every year we've made the finals, or final four, a few times. And we last year we had these t-shirts made that said, like, flatbreads are pizzas too. And we had, like, fake people picketing in front. Just to make fun of the whole thing, because we always lose out. People saying, "Oh, it's really good, but I gotta you know, hold true to the pizza form and go with my gut here." So we have fun with it. Really, it's just we say we use the F word, flatbread. People always love to say that because there is kind of like that the response when people, the taboo of calling it pizza versus.
Flatbread. Yeah, but I think yours doesn't remind me of, like, what I would think of when someone says flatbread.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't think of it. Like, I wouldn't, if I saw, when I, if someone goes to your Instagram and they see your pizza, they're going to be like, oh, that's flatbread.
Yeah. I think for sure, like, we have some flatbreads that sometimes, like, we will do a special, like, a shrimp or a lobster flatbread here and there, and the prices can go up. But generally speaking, like, the things we put on top, we always say, like, have to be accessible for just about anybody.
Yeah.
Anyone should be able to walk in and order it and not feel like they're getting something highbrow. It's very approachable stuff. Like,
yeah,
a lot of flavors and concepts you're used to. So people easily feel comfortable once they order.
Yeah, listen, I think you did a good job, right, naming it, because you do say this, like, diehards in the pizza community who are like, if you're a certain Neapolitan pizza doesn't follow certain guidelines, it's not Neapolitan pizza. And people are always, especially I have people on the podcast who have a Neapolitan style-ish pizza. They're like, I don't know what to call it because I don't follow those guidelines.
Exactly.
I just kind of use a wood oven and I make the dough like I want to make it. And it's like, I guess if you look at it, it kind of looks like Neapolitan, but I technically can't call it that because of the guidelines that I need to use.
Yeah, funny enough, we went to that pizza expo. The first one was, we got out of a finals to go there, and it was like a professor had a deal. He's like, if you go to a trade show of a business you intend to start, you can get out of like one of our midterms or finals. I don't remember. So we used it as an excuse to go to Vegas, but we actually did end
That's
up opening
great.
Up the business. Next to me sat a gentleman who built ovens, and to the other side of me sat a gentleman who was opening up a Neapolitan place. And I stayed in touch with both of them miraculously, and I just kind of like Googled names and found them again. And one was telling me how he's, you know, got a cease and desist because he hadn't like graduated from the Neapolitan school and he was calling it Neapolitan. So he told me to be careful of that. And the other guy ended up connecting us with one of his apprentices who built us our oven. So
It
was like, I was reeling from that coming off of those experiences and saying, okay, we're definitely not Neapolitan. We can't, we don't want to get in legal trouble calling ourselves something we're not. So
yeah,
let's do something completely on our own.
That's good though. Like, create your own path, right? Like, create your own product. Like, you do it how you want to do it. And then you're not stuck to any guidelines or rules.
You know, I'm a big believer in things sort of happening the way they're supposed to. And kind of like, you know, the old, you know, cliche, like the universe will kind of speak to you if you put it out there. Chef Tom was our first ever hire, right? I met him through a connection of his through culinary school that he was at, and I just needed some help reviewing the menu. Anyway, we hit it off, and he grew up in upstate New York, and his whole kind of part of his personality is like, you know, pushing back, kind of fighting trends, and kind of being he's, you know, big alternative culture kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, big into you know, heavy metal and all that stuff, and you know, he set his own course for sure. And, you know, when we first hired him, right away we were like, okay, this guy has to be our chef. Didn't expect that, but it fit so well with his personality that if I had like pushed down to him, hey, we're going to be a Neapolitan style place or a Sicilian, I don't think it would have worked, and he probably wouldn't have worked out with him. So like, everything just kind of happens for a reason. Like, he had all these ideas to put like, you know, mac and cheese on a flatbread. And at the time, all that stuff was kind of new and really
cool.
So, you know, things just worked out. Like, I remember our first big hit was the buffalo chicken, you know, flatbread and the cheeseburger flatbread. And really what it was like Tom putting a different spin and, you know, making a cream base for the buffalo sauce. Not many pizza places in this area were doing that. So,
right.
You know, it worked for us, and everything just kind of lined up really nicely. So
that's great. And you guys do a great job of kind of showcasing that on your social media too. I think I was talking to Tasso. You guys are really going to start doing some videos and show a little bit of behind the scenes of the business too. Is that something that you feel is necessary nowadays, or is it just something that you wanted to do?
Absolutely. So doing this podcast is really cool for us because gets our reps in. But more than that, like, a big part of our business has been our team, You know, you need great people these days more than ever to build business and have scale. And we've had so many amazing people now our partners. So like some of the first people we hired are now have been with us almost 10 years.
Wow.
Now they're actual investors and partners and operators in our new businesses, or our business in that we opened in downtown Milford this year, which everyone should check out. It's a beautiful place.
What is that one?
It's another rail trail flatbread company, but it's in downtown Milford. But what I was saying back to your question about media is just we invest heavily in culture and training and building kind of knowledge and purpose within our ranks. And so we're kind of out there. We do open book management where we train people. We pay people to kind of learn financial literacy, learn about success metrics in the business. They set their own goals. They achieve those goals. And then through there, the portion of the leadership team, the managers, basically receive benefits, or they receive incentivized payouts from the goals that they hit. So they create new profit, and that profit goes back into them, their pockets. So we're out there kind of talking about these things. We've created a lot of training material. And, you know, after a while, a couple things just kept coming back to us, which was like people asking, tell us, why don't we hear these stories? Why don't you talk about your story more? Why aren't you out there kind of giving us behind the scenes? And also, like, why aren't you documenting some of the stuff you're already talking about? You're going to these panels, you're giving talks, you're giving speeches. So it was just a more conscious effort for us to, like, put ourselves out there. One, to get better. Two, to document. And three, I think these days people are checking you out well before they invest in you, whether that's as employees, as investors, or as customers. I think people are checking you out online and expecting that you have a presence. So, you know, before you even think about, you know, a successful product like you're having here with your podcast, I think the important thing is to just, you know, build a track record online and have people be able to see that you're not only saying you're transparent, but you're putting yourself out there.
Yeah. Is the goal for you to open up multiple rail trails?
Well, we've opened our second, which was a big thing. And we feel like, you know, once you open your second location, that kind of, it's one of the only times your company doubles overnight, right?
Right.
If you think about it. We have probably, so our concepts are New City Micro Creamery, which is a scratch kind of farm to table, liquid nitrogen frozen, all natural ice cream. We have three of those locations. We have a wholesale production facility in Shirley, which supplies about, you know, say 600 supermarkets across 11 states.
Is Whole Foods one of them?
Whole Foods is one of them. Yep. Big Y, Roche Brothers. We're on Amazon. So we're building that team. We have the Speakeasy Less Than Greater Than, which is hidden inside the ice cream shop in Hudson. And then we have the two new Rail Trail Flatbread Company locations. So, you know, we've grown our team. We've probably have like close to nearing 500 employees any given time across all three concepts. You asked about our goals. I think our goals are just, we try to keep good targets right now and continue to go down a path and then figure out like if those goals are going to sustain for another 5 years. So, you know, I'd say for our ice cream business, we'd like to open up at least 10 in the New England area and continue to expand our presence in the supermarkets. As far as the rail trail, it seems hard to say like what's next for us there because we just had a massive undertaking with the second location. I think we're certainly open up, you know, when the time is right, we'll look to open up another one.
What's the square footage of the new location?
It's about 20,000 square feet.
That's huge.
Yeah, yeah. We have massive outdoor patio. We have a second floor with private dining and event space. And we have a gigantic commissary in our basement. So we probably have like 8,000 square feet of like prep and cooler space.
Is that where you do the prep and dough and everything for both locations?
No, right now we still do prep out of both locations, but eventually our goal is to have everything kind of centralized. Just because, you know, our rail trail in Hudson is kind of like our prep space. Our original prep space was just like a wooden table with like, you know, it was an old like dining table, yeah. And a cutting board, and now in a small like, you know, Sears freezer. And now it's become like, it's spilling out from under us. So it's we really need the extra space, and part of our story has always just been like doubling down on efficiency and, you know, getting better equipment, you know, figuring out what technology can help us, because we're a big volume place. Definitely a lot of people come through all
of
our.
What do you guys do? What is the average sales for the two restaurants?
Our average sales,
is it alcohol? You have liquor and alcohol too?
Yes. Yeah.
Whole bar.
Oh gosh. Are you asking like per month or per week, or what's the split between both?
Like a year. What is the location you're in to do a year? Like, I think people can kind of assume like the split between food and alcohol and what they do a month if you get with the
yeah, we're probably, you know, each location combined, we're probably doing like close to 6 million.
That's great.
Each location.
So 6 million each location.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. And what percentage of that is like from the bar or from the food?
Most of it's food. We definitely do a lot of bar, but
that's great. That's really busy.
We do a huge takeout business. Tons of dining, of course.
You have how many ice cream shops too?
We have 3 ice cream shops in our wholesale facility.
What do you like better, ice cream or pizza?
Oh gosh, it's like saying which child you like, which one.
It's almost like better. They go together so great, right? Like you gotta have pizza and then
ice cream. One is right across the street from the other. So they're really like sister concepts. Like they go hand in hand, like pizza and beer and cocktails and ice cream. You know what I mean? It's like they work so well together.
It's like my two favorite foods is like pizza and ice cream.
People call it the trifecta. They're like, I come to town for one of the breweries because there's three breweries in town that are awesome. Yeah. And then they come to dinner for us, and then they have ice cream and cocktails across the street. So
what made you get into ice cream? Is it just like you liked it and you wanted to like make some good ice cream, or kind of similar to what you did with the restaurant?
Hudson became like a destination, and there was not a lot to do downtown. We had the space across the street that my father owned that was empty, and we wanted to do something that families that were sitting in Rail Trail could do right after dinner. We wanted to make another draw, and we felt like, you know, a lot of families were asking us, like, is there a place to get ice cream around here? Like, what could we do next? So we wanted to make a place that did all those things, and a place that we could open up again in another community. So ice cream seemed to fit the bill, and then you know, we had a chance to get a liquor license, and that was interesting because it was the last liquor license at the time in the town, and soon became like a battle between big business and small business, even though we didn't intend on it. Our community kind of rallied around us because we were up against the big development group that wanted it at one of the shopping centers. And, you know, Deval Patrick came and visited us, and it became this like big political thing about supporting small business. And we got the liquor license.
Deval Patrick's a former governor of Massachusetts.
So we had all these politicians come out and visit us after we got the liquor license. And we kind of looked around and we're like, okay, we can't just use this liquor license to do alcoholic ice creams. We got to do something cooler. At the time, my other business partner, Jason Kleinerman, his sister was in a cocktail competition, Grand Marnier International Cocktail Competition in Manhattan. And all the bartenders we're hanging out with were telling us, let's go to the speakeasies. And we're like, on one hand, answering emails from the local police department being like, explaining how we're going to separate ice cream alcohol. And then we saw the speakeasy. We're like, that's the answer. We're going to make a speakeasy in the ice cream shop.
That's cool.
And that became a kind of, it has a life of its own. So I love all three concepts. I really do. They're all very, very different. You know, it's hard to decide. They're, you know, any given day operationally, one might give me the bigger headache. So I might say,
I was going to say, one. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, which one's easier to operate? Is it easier to operate an ice cream shop or is it easier to operate like a pizza restaurant?
Totally different set of problems. You know, at first I was always thinking ice cream's easy. But the more we get into it, they're very, very different. Like running rail trails are more like running, you know, people often will say that it's got the menu of a cheesecake factory. You know, they're just quite a bit. There's quite a bit of options. There's full bar, amazing cocktails, amazing beer, great wine, dessert, the works, right? And our ice cream shops have smaller menus, of course, but you know, it's seasonal business, younger staff, transient staff, it's we don't cut corners over there, so it's an expensive product. So, you know, both different set of challenges, but both really fun.
And I know we're kind of mixing the ice cream and the pizza, but the ice cream shops, do you close during the winter or is it just slower?
No, we're all year round.
Just not as busy, right?
It's not as busy for sure, but it is connected to the speakeasy, so we constantly have a flow through there because people.
Plus, I feel like we're in New England, and like it's cold here all the time, so it's like people want ice cream regardless of how.
Highest per capita consumption of ice cream is in New England, really.
That's because we're all miserable here because it's so cold all the time, and ice cream makes people happy.
That's one way of looking at it. We also have really good ice cream. There's tons of great concepts that came out of here. Like, people don't. It's funny. I've traveled to different states and different parts of the world. People don't really have the same relationship with ice cream that we have.
No, they don't. No. Same. I've been to California. I've been to Florida. I've been to like Louisiana. I've been to Chicago. Like the ice cream is the only place that it's similar. Is like I went to Milwaukee one time and they have a couple like custard places that they're like really known for.
Ohio, Milwaukee, you know, anywhere in Minnesota, some parts of LA. But yeah, like I visited a friend in one part of the country and he's like, let's go get popsicles. I was like, popsicles?
What are we, 10?
I want ice cream.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, that's fantastic. And I like the branding too. I'll link up your ice cream, a New City Micro Creamery on Instagram. I like the website. It looks really clean and I like the branding you guys have going on there too.
Thank
so
you.
That's cool. I'll link
Thank
that up
you.
If anybody wants to go check that out. In the show notes for this. One thing I wanted to go back on, one of my last questions for you, is the open book policy. Can you explain that a little bit? Like, what's the thought process behind that? And if anybody's not familiar with what that is, can you just, like, give a little bit of behind the scenes of what that actually is?
Yeah, so right off the bat, when we were opening the business, we wanted a ways to incentivize, like, our kitchen teams to think about revenue generation, I'm sorry, and our back house teams to think about cost savings. So just trying to cross promote the mentalities, right, that might be competing and getting people to be incentivized towards the P&L. We wanted to have an organization that was focused on the P&L, the numbers as well, not just the fun stuff, right? That's something that sometimes people overlook in our industry. So we were doing some research and looking into ways of building some of these incentive plans, incentive payouts. And, you know, we met a couple people that were also kind of studying a way of thinking, a way of business management that kind of was more prevalent in manufacturing. Yeah. A guy named Jack Stack kind of started this way of thinking. It's open book management, which is basically like creating a transparent organization financially, basically showing the performance of the business to your team, helping them understand what those numbers mean, that team creating sort of key performance metrics that they were going to try to achieve through different tools like scoreboards, right? Little mini games that they create and trying to hit those goals, tracking those goals on their own, setting achievable targets on their specific line items on the P&L. And then through those those games, incentivizing through those financial goals payouts back to the team.
That's great.
So it's something that started in manufacturing, and we were like, that's really cool. How can we adapt it to restaurants? So we started implementing like a program within our business, and we had it funded. We were one of the few restaurants that created a grant for this, and we received a grant from the state for many years to create this program. And you know, really, it's done so many things for us. One, it helps guide our culture of being transparent and kind of being open to our team about everything we're doing. What are the purposes of the company? What are some of the goals? What are some of the targets we're hitting? Whether that's, do we invest in something new, a new piece of equipment, or do we open a new location?
Right.
There's a discussion and there's a purpose. And people kind of understand why we're doing certain things. There's an understanding of the mentality of ownership, right? So there's constant tracking back to ownership thinking and what the actual owners are doing. And then through that, you kind of just have a better culture overall. And in turn, it's paid so many dividends in retention, training, and just overall culture. So
yeah, I love that. And I so many people have asked me about that because they want to pay their managers. And they're like, all right, how do I incentivize them? And then they're afraid to show the managers like the books, right? Like they're afraid to show them the books because I don't know, maybe it's, they, I don't know why they're afraid to show people the books, but they are, and they don't want to do that. And they're like, well, how do you incentivize someone?
It's scary, right? It's a private thing. Like it's very, your finances are a private thing, and it's
true.
I grew up, like I said, in family business, like one man shows, and yeah. I saw how tough it was. And we were as a whole family, if you think about it, running an open book organization, like talking about the P&L of the family and the family business. But I saw how hard it was for like a couple to run a restaurant and a business. And I saw that it took a whole family to actually make it successful. So I knew if I was ever going to get into the restaurant world, I was never going to try to be, you know, do it all myself and not have any help. I said, I'm only going to do this if I have great partners around me. So, you know, Kareem and Jason, Chef Tom, some of the other many partners that have now become part of our business, you know, they were instrumental. And so if you don't have partners around you and then eventually a growing list of partners to help like lean upon and lean in on when things are tough, you know, it's really hard to survive. So I'm always like saying kudos to the restaurant owners that are just own it all themselves. But our goal is to continue to grow and to have opportunities and create new opportunities for the people within our family. And if it was all just on us and we were keeping everything, I think it would be really difficult, bad quality of life. And I don't think it would have been as rewarding to see other people, you know, establish themselves and hit their, you know, family goals.
And there's no assumptions too, right? Like if you open the books, there's none of your employees are like assuming something because they can just see and they know what's going on. If they want to be involved, they can be involved, I'm sure.
Like you say, it's a perfect way of putting it. If you want to be involved, it's a great litmus test for people that want to take action and do something.
I always say to people like on the podcast many times, I'm like, there's two ways of doing inventory. There's one way of the manager doing inventory, which is like, all right, it's like borderline, I'm just going to order it. And then there's the owner. And it's like borderline, you're like, damn, do I have enough money in the bank account to pay for that? Like there's two ways of doing that inventory because when you're the, and it's different. There's a different way of thinking when you're the owner versus the manager. Because when you're the manager, you always want to be the owner. But then like you don't have to pay for that inventory when it comes in or make sure you have enough money in the bank to pay the taxes and the payroll and all that stuff.
But it's always one of my favorite parts is teaching people the uses of profit. It's like, it's not just the revenue.
Right.
You know,
don't just get to keep it all.
You know, we got to pay taxes. You know, reinvest. We got to buy some of those equipment, those capital investments. Like, wow. You know, like their eyes get big and people understand like, okay, there's more to this.
Yeah. That's why we all have gray hair when we're the owners after so many years, because it's like, all right, there's a lot of stress that goes on with that. So that you don't get when you're the employee, but like, you know, it's great to be the owner, but sometimes I wish, you go back and be the employee. You're like, it's like you become the owner and you're like, wow, when I was the employee, you always wanted to be the owner. And then like, I wish I could go back and just be the employee. Just come in, clock in, work for a couple of days and go home.
That, you know, it's funny you say that. Cause like I was talking to a friend the other day and they were, you know, telling me about, they wanted to start this business. I said, listen, you know, you realize the second you become the owner, you're now working for people. Like you're the server.
Yeah.
You're serving the people that you work for. Like when it's a one man show, you're pretty much like, it's the most freedom you'll ever have. But the second you really become a company, it's when you hire people and they're working for you. And once you hire people, you're working for them. Like that's at least the way it should be, I think.
Yeah. You're responsible. Like you have that responsibility of like, you have to support their family now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a huge burden to have. But this is great. I don't want to take too much of your time, Michael, but I'll link up everything in the show notes. What's the website? Is it Rail Trail Flatbread?
Rail Trail Flatbread Company.com.
Okay. Yeah. Rail Trail Flatbread.com. And yep. I'll link that up. And then the Instagram. And then also the ice cream place. I think that's pretty cool. You guys have good branding over there and good marketing. We didn't really get into too much marketing, but I think we're going to come in and do a video if you guys are up for that. And we'll talk about marketing when we kind of come in and do that and show the behind the scenes there.
I'd love it.
This was great, Michael. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all the info. And I thought it was a great podcast.
Appreciate it very much. Thanks for your time. And we're here for you. Anything, any way we could cooperate, we'd love to do more.
Thank you. Thank you to Michael for joining me on the podcast. I really enjoyed talking to him. And again, like I said in the beginning of this, if you want to see Michael's business, in the next couple of weeks, I am going to be stopping into Rail Trail. Maybe even the ice cream place too, and kind of give you a behind the scenes look of what it's like to operate. Whatever we talked about in today's episode, you'll be able to see on our YouTube channel. Smart Pizza Marketing for that. We also have a ton of videos over there already, some interviews that we've done, but also we've done some of these in pizzeria style videos. We did Garlic Breath, which is out this week. We did Jeff's Pizza. We did Blue Square Pizza. We also did Mortadella Head and Alex from Hot Tongue Pizza in LA on the road. We're on the road doing these, so I'm going to be traveling a lot, doing a lot of these videos over on YouTube, so go subscribe over there if you can. Very much appreciate it. Leave a comment. Leave a thumbs up on those videos if you like them so we can do more. Very much appreciate it. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. Much appreciated. We'll see you right back here on the next episode of the Smart Pizza Marketing Show.